The organization, the Foundation for a Better Life, was founded in the year 2000. And the goal of their organization was to create public service campaigns that would help communicate values that made a difference in our communities. They thought if they could communicate these right values in different ways, it would help call the best out of people. And so they started working on, and maybe you've seen some of these billboards out there, the benefits of a positive life and these values that would help. And so they said their goal was to offer inspirational messages to people everywhere as a contribution towards promoting good values, good role models, and a better life. So they have these billboards that maybe you've seen driving on the highway. They have commercials on TV, and they share different values like courage and character and overcoming hard things and civility and kindness and service and grit and innovation and motivation, optimism, peace, confidence, compassion, hard work. It was interesting because when they were set to debut these billboards, September 11th happened. And so some of their very first billboards they showed were pictures of unity and determination. And they had pictures of the American flag and the guys putting it up in the wreckage. And they had pictures of firefighters covered in the dust and the mess that ran into the hardest things. And you've probably seen there's famous people on them, like Oprah or Winston Churchill, Nelson Mandela's on them, Michael J. Fox, Abraham Lincoln, Benjamin Franklin. And this is what they said. They said, "We choose values we hope most individuals would find encouraging and relevant. And then we provide an uplifting message based on each value in an effort to encourage people to bring out the best in themselves." And so it's neat because this nonprofit organization just exists to help share values for a better life, to build foundations to help people think about doing life differently, to call out the best in them, and then on every one of the billboards it says, pass it on. So it's not just a value that they get to share and we get to learn, but the hopes is in learning it, we pass that value on to others. So it's interesting because sometimes we have to ask ourselves, like, what is a value? Like, when I think about that, it's easy to kind of get mixed up in stuff we've heard or stuff we've seen. But when we really break it down, what is a value and what does it really mean for us? Values are these individual beliefs that motivate people to act one way or another. They become guides for human behavior. And if you've ever taken any type of ethics class, like maybe back in college or somewhere along the line, you've heard this idea that values are the things that help us determine what actions are best to do or what are the best ways for us to live. And it's neat because if you really think about your life, like as we grow up in life, you've seen your values change. You've seen the things that mattered to you at one point and helped you determine the choices you were going to make. And then they changed as your life changed, as your phases changed. When I was a little girl, I had one driving value and it was bubblegum. And my life, I was a little bit obsessed about bubblegum, revolved around how to get more bubblegum, how to conserve the bubble gum I had or recycle it. We stuck it on the wall in a lot of different places. Anytime I got gum, I would try to factor like how much money, if I got money, I would try to figure out how much gum I could pay for with that money. Like how much would that break down? It was a very big part of my life. How could I hide it in my mouth when I wasn't supposed to be chewing it? How could I take it to school with me and not get caught? Okay, well, as I got older, yes, I'm still a big fan of gum, but it's not quite the same driving degree for my life as it used to be. But as a teenager, I had a big driving value, and my big driving value was figuring out how to do the things I wanted to do that my parents didn't want me to do. Because my parents also had driving values, and we didn't agree a lot on what was the most important value, and we didn't really come to terms a lot on what was a good idea for fun, because for some reason they didn't think my ideas were good ideas for fun, and so they had rules that didn't fit in with the things I wanted to do, and so I tried to work my way around those things to do what I wanted to do anyways. That was my driving value. How was I going to have fun and not get caught by my parents? All right. Well, then my values changed as I got older, and my parents aren't really making the decisions for me, and they're not the ones saying you should do this and you shouldn't do this, and trying to figure out how to do work, and then it was how to do work and go to school, then it was how to do work and go to school and hang out with my friends and do all the stuff that I wanted to do. And now I'm in a different phase of my life. I find myself a parent who's creating the rules and the values in our house and saying you should do and you shouldn't do. And my life looks different now. My values have changed as my life phases have changed. And yours probably have too. Like, you can think about things that were so important to you at one point that now really don't take any of your time or energy. And whether we pay attention to it or not, our values really direct the choices we make on a daily basis. Because the things that we say matter the absolute most build the foundation for us on how we do life. Now, the problem is most of us haven't really spent a lot of time thinking about this. We've not really spent a lot of time working our way through what are my values. Or if somebody cornered us and said, okay, like, what are your top five values? You're like, oh, that's a good question. I don't know. I've never thought about it before. Or we've never really spent time clarifying what's most important to us. But the trick is, we do have values. Whether we pick them or acknowledge them, what we do on a daily basis, the choices we make are driven by our values, by the things that we say matter the most. Now, what happens is, if we haven't really narrowed that down or thought about it, we kind of float our way through life, picking up things as we go. Or we kind of work our way through, like, I heard this when I was little, or this is what I was taught, so I'm reteaching it, or for good or for bad, we have these ideas we've heard here and there that we've kind of absorbed into our life. Or we've picked up other things as we do life, right? Like, as we have new friends or as we have new relationships, we've seen other people do things, or we saw it on TV and it looked like a good idea, or social media. And because we never really determined our own core values, we find ourselves feeling the tension of conflictions in, but I don't know if that confliction is a word, conflicting tensions, conflicting ideas, not knowing how to make decisions because we're not really sure what to do, or confused about what the right thing is to do, or not sure which way the right way is to go. And when we don't know what matters most, we aren't sure which decisions to make, and we're not sure what values are built into our life, but we kind of just take whatever information is in front of us, or whatever is the most urgent, or whatever feels the strongest, and let that kind of direct us. And then we find this disparity for ourselves between, like, I think I should be this person, I want to be this person, but the things that I do regularly don't line up with that. So I think I should have these values. I think these things are important, but I never do them. I never ever make actions or choices based on those things, and there's a tension here, and there's a space between the two. So what happens is values become the things that we do on a daily basis. They become the things that guide our choices and kind of that foundation for who we want to be. I love this quote by Alan Bloom. He says, authentic values are those by which life can be lived, which can form a people that produces great deeds and thoughts. But what's interesting is he says, authentic values, not like wishful values or on a perfect day values or if everything worked together values, but authentic values for who we really are. And so we start with determining our values and how that helps us. I read this article in Psychology Today that said when we determine our values, it makes making decisions easier. Because what happens is it's not hard to make the decision once you know what your driving values are. Does this line up with who I said I was going to be? Does this create a conflict about what I says matter the most? And it also said that our values help us once we determine them through hard times. Because we all face challenging moments, we all have struggles, we all have hardship that happens, and the values don't make the hard times easier, but what it does do is help us not lose our way as we navigate the hard times. Knowing our values keeps us on track. If I don't know what's most important, what I stand for, what I believe in, what I'm committed to being, it's super easy to get off course. It's super easy to jump all around the place and to waste time on things that really don't help me be the person I said that I wanted to be. So knowing our values helps us stay on track and work in ways that serve our very best good. I love this one, and it's such a different idea. It's this Hawaiian concept of pono. And it says, when we know our own values, this concept, and what it means is you feel right with yourself. You feel right with the world, and it's that feeling that you're aligned with who you really are. Do you ever just feel uncomfortable with yourself? Like you're not comfortable in your own skin, or you're not comfortable with the way things have been going, or you're not comfortable with the way things are. This idea, this concept, when we know our values, helps us to feel at ease with ourselves. All right, but here's the truth. We have to pick them. We have to choose what our best values are in order to live them out. We have to have that foundation for which way to go, and it requires action. And it requires training. It requires thinking about it in an intentional way. Look at what Paul said to his friend Timothy in this letter he wrote him. He said, have nothing to do with irreverent, silly myths. Rather, train yourself for godliness. For while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. The saying is trustworthy and deserving of full acceptance. For to this end, we toil and strive because we have our hope set on the living God, who is the Savior of all people, especially of those who believe. So Paul's writing this letter to his friend Timothy, and he's giving him advice, and he's trying to encourage him and say, if you want to live your very, very best life, if you want to be the very best man and the very best leader that you can aspire to be, here's the best encouraging advice I can give you. Number one, stop having anything to do with irreverent, silly myths. And I love this because, like, we all have fallen for these silly myths at one point or another, right? Like, fictional characters that at one point in our life we believed were true. Or do you remember those things that your parents told you at one point? Like if you made a funny face, I don't know that my parents told me this, but somebody told us this. If you make a funny face and somebody slapped you on the back, your face would stay that way. Did you ever hear that before? Or if you sit too close to the TV, you're going to go blind. If you swallow gum, it's going to stay in your stomach for 7 years. Unconvinced. But you could eat carrots. That would make your eyesight better. Or does anybody remember if you pee in the pool, it will change colors? Come on. That was used to intimidate a few children. All right. Now, eventually, we came to the point where, like, that pool did not change colors. It's not purple trails floating around anywhere in there. Or we learned the things that weren't true. And we're like, oh, that was a silly myth that I fell for. Well, the same things happen in life, right? Like, those same ideas pop up, and we do it in all aspects of our life. We pick these silly myths and accept them as truth. We do it in our faith. We heard somewhere along the line something about God, and we absorbed it into what we believe, and we're like, well, that's true. Or we absorb some ideas like God's only going to like me if I do this, and God's not going to like me if I do that, and I'm only going to get to heaven if I do these things. I'm not going to get to heaven if I do these things. And we absorb these ideas into what we believe about God without ever questioning, is that true? Is that true, or did I just hear a silly myth that I believed at one point in my life? We do it in our relationships, right? Like, I have to be this kind of person to get accepted. I have to be this kind of person to get loved. I have to do this kind of thing to get their approval, and they really notice me when I do this. We do this in politics all of the time, right? If I watched it on this news channel, it must be true. I saw it on Facebook. Of course it's real. Of course they knew what they were talking about, right? You're either with us or you are the problem. And we do this. We pick up these myths. Social media makes this really fun to do. We pick up these ideas and we give them value and we listen to them and we let them direct our lives. And Paul says, stop doing that. Stop it. That doesn't help you. It's not a foundation to build on because there's always going to be a new myth. There's always going to be a new fad, a new false idea. There's always going to be changing stories. And if you sway with every passing fancy that comes along, you're never going to have a strong foundation for which to build your life. Stop listening to all of these silly myths. Instead, he gives us an option. Now, how do we know it's a silly myth? Here's where the tension is, right? Like, that sounds like a good idea, but how do we know? Like, how do we know it's not true? How do we know that it's not real? How do we actually check? So, Let me give you a couple suggestions. Number one, if you read an article on social media, go to a fact finder website and verify that it's true before you let it make your decisions for you. Because there's a lot of not true ones on there. There are a lot of good fact finding websites that will help you direct that. If it's an idea about God that you're not sure about, talk to someone, talk to us, talk to a trusted friend and say, you know what? I've been thinking about this for a long time. How do I know it's not true? Compare it with what else you know to be true about God. God is consistent. And if you know something that doesn't line up with something else you know, there should be some thinking about it. There should be some working your way through it. Let's talk about it. The church is a good place to ask questions. You're allowed to ask questions in the church to help you find stuff out. Okay. So Paul says, don't do that. Instead, rather, train yourself for godliness. For while bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come. I love this. Paul's my guy. He said, you know what? Training your body's like some value. Some value. We all know taking care of our body is a good thing. We all know we should eat healthy and exercise. It's good for us. It's all those things that come along with it. But no matter how well I take care of my body, like no matter how much time I spend dieting and exercising and getting what I think is the perfect physique, every one of our bodies has a shelf life. Every one of them. Every single one of us was not designed to have a body that lasted forever. And what life doesn't take from it, age will. And no matter how well we take care of our physical self, we cannot stop age from catching up to us, and it will have its say. It will have its way with our life. Yes, there's value in taking care of my body, but it's temporary, and it absolutely doesn't last. He says, greater than the training that goes into your physical self is the training that goes into your inward self. The value you place on caring for your soul that you carry with you long after your body has weathered and aged its time out. So there is value in training ourselves for godliness because we have a soul that lasts with us for an eternity. And just like an athlete trains themselves to be their very best and they put in the time and the work and the energy and the training, we can put energy and time and training into training ourselves, our spiritual selves, in godliness that has value beyond just this life that we have. But it requires practice. It requires time. It requires training. Because guess what? As we are aware, godliness isn't automatic. Doesn't just come naturally to me. Like, I don't just wake up one morning and be like, you know what? I'm going to be more like God today. I can do that, right? Like, that's no problem. Life is life, and we don't just automatically wither into it. We don't just happen to accidentally stumble into being a godly person. But we practice it. We work on it. We make it an intentional part of our lives, and we train ourselves in the habit, in the value of being more godlike. And what's really interesting about this godliness idea is it requires a shift in focus. It requires us to shift our focus from being self-centered to spending our time and our energy and putting our focus and attention towards God. If you break down what godliness means, there's all kinds of great definitions and great ideas. You know, literally at its core means God-likeness, and there's piety that goes with it and aiming at the divine and turning towards that way. I love how Augustine talks about it. He says, it's having a well-ordered heart. And having a well-ordered heart is to love the right thing to the right degree in the right way with the right kind of love. Which sounds amazing, but I can't do that on my own. My heart gets out of order. I can't do that well consistently. I can't do that well day after day after day with any measure of success without the help of Jesus Christ. I can't grow in the value of godliness without help beyond what I can do on my own. Paul says, here's a value that you can literally build your life on, and that is Jesus Christ. He says, you can value Christ in the kind of way that you keep practicing the ideas, the personhood that he's called you to. You keep practicing turning away from what just comes naturally and turning towards who he is and putting our focus on him. says you can practice valuing Christ and spending time with him daily. And when we do, it changes things. It changes us. It changes our inward selves and helps us think about doing life differently. Because even as my life changes, even as my phases of life change, 10 years from now, I'm going to be in a different phase of life. 20 years from now, I'm going to be in a different phase of life, and things are going to feel different and look different. Those phases come and go, but Christ is a constant. I can always build my life around him, and no matter what stage I'm in, I have a value I can cling to, a foundation that I can stand on. And what happens is, it doesn't matter what age I am, whether I'm 15 or 35 or 65, I can value Christ and build my life around him. I can grow up in him. I can think about him. I can direct my heart towards him. Now, what happens is, do I value Christ that way? That's the question that we have to ask. Because what we value shows up in our life. What we do day after day after day shows the things that we value. So no matter what I say out loud, it's my actions, the choices, the life decisions I make that express the values that we have. Our values define what we really care about, not what we say we care about, right? Because it's easy to say the right words. It's easy to sprout off all of the right religious sayings, and it's easy to communicate the right words. It's much harder to actually do them, to actually live them out in a regular way. We give the best of ourselves to the things that we value. We say, this matters so much, I want to give the very best of who I am towards this. I might say I value it, but if it doesn't show up in what I give it or the effort or time I spend with it, I find excuses not to do it. I'm looking for an out because I don't want to. What happens is, when I say I value Christ, more than just the words I say, the life I live reflects the things that I value. So I have to ask myself the hard question that says, does my life show that I value Jesus Christ? If somebody was to talk to me, or somebody was to see me, does my life reflect that Christ matters to me and I've put him first? Do the things I do daily, not just one day of the week, but regularly, do they show that I have a heart that cares about Jesus Christ? We can all find ways to value Jesus Christ more. We can all find ways to spend time with him, connecting with him, and building the foundation of our life off of him. Paul says, please listen to me. This saying is trustworthy. It's deserving of full acceptance. He likes to use these words like, don't miss this. What I'm going to say is super important. It's trustworthy. You can count on it. He says, to this end, we toil and strive because we have our hope set on the living God, who is the Savior of all people, especially of those who believe. He says, I really want you just to lean in and hear this. I don't want you to miss these things. We toil and strive because we have our hope set on the living God. He said, we work and we work to the point that we are exhausted with it work. We agonize over it. We don't quit because our hope is set in something bigger than just what we see day to day. We have this hope for the future, this hope for what might be, this hope for who we could become, what this world might be, what our family might be, what our communities might be. We have this hope when we're looking at God. When our eyes are set on God, we see everything different. When we're looking at the possibility of what God might do, everything changes. But sometimes it's hard to turn our eyes away from the things that scare us, from the loud noise of what we see happening in the world, from the struggle and the pain and the problem, to look to God. It's easy to see the problem. It's harder to look to God and let him direct our hope. But Paul says, this is why we work. This is why we labor. This is why we strive and we toil and we don't give up, because God is living. He's at work. He is active right here, right now in this world. And when we focus on that, it gives us the ability to work hard. It gives us the courage to not want to quit. It gives us the ability to not quit because we don't know what God might do. We don't know. And we don't want to quit before we see. We don't want to give up too soon because we don't know what He might do. The more we know God, the more we are able to hope for the future. The more we're able to look ahead and see better days coming, to see better on the horizon, and it allows us to push past beyond the discouragement and beyond the disappointment and say, God's not done yet. It might feel this way right now, but God isn't finished. He's got more to do. And when we set our eyes on Him, we get to push forward with hope, to keep trying even when it gets hard. To keep saying, this matters to me. I'm going to keep training myself. I'm going to put the work in. I'm going to discipline myself because I don't want to give up. Because our hope is bigger than just in us. Our hope is bigger than just what we can see and what we can feel. Our hope is in the living God. And look, living out values isn't easy. Here's what's going to happen. You're going to say, I'm going to set this value for my life and I want to be this kind of person. And you're immediately going to run into opposition. Somebody's not going to like you doing that because they want you to do what you've always done. And the second you change, they're going to feel uncomfortable and they're going to want you to go back. Or what's going to happen is the second you say, this matters to me, I'm not compromising on it anymore, you are going to have a rush of ways that you want to compromise, that you want to give in, and you want to say, okay, I didn't really mean it, next time I'll do it. What happens is the second we define a value, we're going to have to really live it out. We're going to have to do it, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not going to come naturally. We're going to have to work for it. We're going to have to strive for it. But our reminder is we can, because the living God is on our side. We can push through when we want to give in because God is cheerleading us every step of the way. He's encouraging us. He's championing us. He's saying, don't quit yet. Wait till you see what's going to happen. He's giving us all the strength and the courage and the hope that we need to keep on pushing through. But we can't quit. We have to work for it. Anything, and you know, anything worth anything in your life, you've put effort into it. It's good because you worked at it. It's good because you watered the grass on your own side of the fence rather than saying how much better it was on somebody else's. It's working because you put time into it, because you put energy into it, because you put your heart into it. And Paul says we can put our foundation in Jesus Christ. We can value Him in the kind of way that gives us courage and hope for the future, because when our eyes are set on Him, we are reminded there is nothing that our God won't do. We are reminded that He's on our side, that He's working with us. He's not going to abandon us. He's not going to say, set this value, live it out, and then I'll see you later. He's going to go through it with us, helping us to get where we need to be. To really become the men and women we say we want to be, it starts with us saying, this is what I value. This is what matters to me. And then building our life around that. Putting the best of ourselves into that, putting our time into that, putting our energy into that, letting that be the thing that helps us make life's choices, letting that be the thing that guides us and directs us and live them out every day, practicing them regularly, training ourselves in them, building our lives around them. So now we have to say, what are my values? What are my non-compromising, I won't do anything but these values, and how do I make them show up in my life regularly? If you've never done this before, no problem, it's a great time to start. If you've never thought about this before, you are at the perfect time to do it today. There are so many different ways to think about this. Here's what you get to do. Write this down, or you can put it in your notes if you're taking them on the app with us. You're going to Google something for me. Just Google determining your values. And when you do, there's all kinds of things you can look at. There's a list with like 200 words on it. Just pick a couple. There are tests you can take to see, like, this is what I like, this is what matters to me, this is what you can choose from any of them. But what I want you to do is I want you to spend time thinking about it this week. Just find somewhere in your busy week, somewhere in your schedule, to think about, who do I want to be? Who do I really desire to be? And am I living that now? What's the difference between who I say I want to be and who I actually am? And how do I close that gap? Because that gap is where the big old giant hypocritical world lives, right? Like, I say I want to be one person, but I live another life. How do I close that gap so I find consistency in being the person I say I want to be regularly? You don't have to have 100. Start with a few. Start with a handful and work your way through it. I promise I'm doing this right now myself. Let me give you a couple of ideas. I read this from an article this week. Here are their suggestions for actually living out your core values. Number one, review your core values frequently. Write them down. Like, don't just put it in your head. A very smart person told me, until we write it down, it's just wishful thinking. I wish I could be that way. It sounds like a good idea, but write it down on a piece of paper and look at it. Whether that's a note on your phone, or whether that's an app that you use to keep track of stuff, or a post-it note, or a 3x5 note card, whatever way you like to write it down somewhere and say, these are my core values. This is what I say matters enough that I'm going to start building my life and let them show up in my life. And then look at them again and again and again. Put them in a place where you can see them and look at them regularly. The next thing they said is, don't make a major decision without examining them. The next time you have a big life decision to make, a choice that you're trying to work through, pull out your core values and say, as I try to make these decisions, how do my core values help me? How do my core values direct me? How do my core values help me stay the course to be the kind of person I want to do? And then the last one they said is, take inventory of the daily small decisions and determine if they fit in with your core values. Because sometimes we don't have big decisions. We just have a lot of little decisions we make day after day after day after day. And if we aren't careful, as we make these little decisions, we get further away from our core values and the person that we said we want to be. So determine what they are. Pick your core values. And we're going to talk about this for weeks and give you some good ideas to think through. So bring your notes, bring your ideas with you. We're going to give some good suggestions for values to build your life around. And then practice them. Write them down so you can see them and start using them as you think about your life. Okay. I read this book recently called Fly Girls by Patricia Pearson. And it was so cool. It was such a cool story. It tells the story of these women, these real-life women, who became pilots during World War II. Now, what's interesting is there's a lot of history you can read about the war, but there was a moment where the Air Force, the U.S. Air Force, didn't have enough skilled pilots. And so there was this huge need for more pilots, but only men were allowed to fly military planes. So there was this group of women. There was two women who really kind of, like, paved the way for this to happen. And they got together all of these. There was two different groups of them. One was really trained pilots. They already had time. They were already teaching classes. Another was like, they taught them from the ground up. And what they did is started doing jobs here so it could free up more of the pilots to go fight on the front lines. So they did things like ferrying planes from factories to military bases so they could get them out sooner. They flew training programs so that people could get trained faster. They actually took on some horrible jobs to train these guys and help them get out in the air faster. One of the things they did, I don't know if they were crazy or just had an incredible amount of courage, is they would fly these low target planes for live ammunition artillery training. Here's what that means. They would fly low with a big sheet hanging out behind it, and they would let guys on the ground shoot at them, so that these guys could learn how to shoot down enemy planes. And they used live ammunition so that when they landed the plane, they could judge their accuracy. These women flew knowing they were getting shot at by newbies trying to learn how to shoot, and they stinking did it anyways and let them shoot and count all the bullet holes when they landed. They would fly planes that had been repaired to test them and make sure they worked, or things with deficiency to find out if they were safe enough, and some of them weren't. 38 women died serving in this program. Now, some people were thankful for their help. They thought it was awesome that these women were willing to serve and do these jobs. Other people weren't. They didn't think girls should be flying planes, and they made their lives harder because of it. One woman was ferrying a plane to a military base, and the weather got bad, so she had to do an emergency landing at another base that wasn't on her schedule. They didn't believe her, and they kicked her off the base. They kept the plane and kicked her off the base. So she found somewhere else to sleep that night, snuck back into the military base, got her plane, and flew it because she had a drop to make, and she wasn't going to be stopped. It's so crazy when you read about these women's life stories. They weren't militarized. They were civilians, which means they paid for their own uniforms. They paid for a lot of their own stuff. They were paid less than others, didn't get the military benefits that other people did. And some of them died serving for this cause that they believed in. Now, if you read their story and you read the history of how it worked, it's crazy how courageous these women were. It's crazy how they didn't give up. There was about 1,100 women altogether who completed the program and actually served in this process. No matter how hard it was, no matter the losses they experienced, they didn't give up because they had a driving value that wouldn't let them. They so valued serving their country. They so valued serving on the side of justice. They so valued the idea that they had skills and a contribution to make, and they loved flying. They were good at it. And because they lived out those values, they did an incredible work of courage to help fight on the side of justice. Because they so believed in their values, they wouldn't be intimidated, they wouldn't be discouraged, they wouldn't quit, and they got to be part of this incredible piece of history. I think it was Barack Obama gave him the Congressional Medal of Honor 2009, a lot of years later. When we get our values right, it directs our lives to be the very best people we were created to be. It allows us to say yes to the things that help us be more of that person and no to the things that hold us back. Our values direct our choices and help us build the foundation for an incredible life. Getting them right has all the potential in the world to empower us to be influential champions for good right now in our life.